This is the Down East Journal on Public Radio East. For the past 2 weeks, the cells of the Beaufort County Jail have been empty. It's because of electrical outages on June 6th and June 8th, the result of a newly installed laundry dryer system. Beaufort County Sheriff Alan Jordan says most of the 70 inmates that were evacuated were placed in Bertie County Correctional Institution, with the rest going to local jails in Pitt and Pamlico counties.
Smell of smoke and the appearance of smoke, it just highlighted the issues we have with safety in terms of, for example, trying to evacuate the jail in emergency conditions.
The process of moving inmates has cost taxpayers over $50,000 so far, and it could be a week or more before the inmates are transferred back to the Beaufort County Jail. This incident has caused a major disagreement to resurface between the sheriff and some of the county's commissioners over the conditions at the prison and whether a new one should be built.
It's my job to protect the public's money, not put prisoners in plush conditions.
Beaufort County Commissioner Hood Richardson is among the camp that believes conditions at the jail are safe and adequate.
The controversy behind this whole issue is the desire of some people to build a new jail at a cost of in excess of $20 million.
Others, including Sheriff Alan Jordan, argue time and use has caused the facility to fall into disrepair and become functionally outdated.
With the help of the county commissioners, who I've always tried to give credit to when credit is deserved, we've managed to put bandages on wounds and keep our heads above water, so to speak, in that facility. But it's been my contention since I've been sheriff, and even before I was sheriff, while I was the chief deputy here, that we need to be making substantive progress towards building a new facility that will serve the citizens of this county safely well into the future.
The Beaufort County Jail was built in the 1970s and houses up to 85 inmates. When asked about repairs that needed to be made to make the facility safe, Sheriff Jordan didn't offer any specifics. He did tell me the problems aren't just limited to electrical and plumbing issues.
The jail is constructed in what's called a linear fashion. That is, they're cell blocks that are isolated from view. It makes it very hard to supervise the inmates. You don't have line of sight supervision of the inmates, which enhances the risk of assault not only on inmate to inmate, but inmate on officer.
The design of the underground jail brings up another issue. There's no room for a second expansion if needed. A lawsuit in the early 1980s ordered the first expansion because of overcrowding.
With that expansion, we lost all of our room for support functions such as meal preparation, sick call, storage, trash disposal, attorney-client visits. So we have to try to find spaces and be very imaginative and innovative in the way we use what space we have.
Sheriff Jordan says the Beaufort County Jail, which is located two blocks from the Pamlico River and the basement of the Washington Courthouse, is also susceptible to flooding. Each time there's a major rain event, he says prisoners have to be evacuated as a precautionary measure.
It's better in the long run to build an appropriate facility rather than pouring money into one that ultimately, I think at some point, we're going to be forced to build a new one. And I hope the catalyst for that isn't someone being injured or killed in this facility.
Commissioner Richardson says the sheriff is using the flooding issue as an excuse.
The floor and the ground at the jail is right at the base flood elevation, which FEMA has determined. The jail has never been flooded. He wants to keep using this. He's just crying wolf.
Commissioner Richardson and Sheriff Jordan have opposing ideas over the future of the jail. Commissioner Richardson admits the jail could use some updates, but believes it's safe for the staff and inmates. Last month, he said state inspectors did their biannual sweep of the facility and found no major problems.
We comply with their request and defects that they find that need correcting each time they come by. Like the last time, there were showers that had not been repaired in several weeks and had hot water running and couldn't turn the water off. The commissioners were not aware of this. We rely on the sheriff to do this. And what we found is that the sheriff is dragging his feet in keeping the jail in condition for prisoners under the idea that if it gets bad enough, he'll get a new jail.
Richardson says the problem is not making repairs to the facility. He says the problem is in supervising the sheriff.
I have the distinction as a county commissioner of having been thrown out of the jail twice in 2 days because I was trying to see what the defects were in the jail. The sheriff doesn't want the public to know how good a condition the jail is in.
Sheriff Jordan maintains that the facility has problems that state inspectors weren't able to find.
Yeah, they're not chasing down electrical problems. They're not opening access panels and crawling in to looking at plumbing that's buried deep in the bowels of the jail. They're not doing those type of things. They're walking around and looking at safety issues that are easily seen.
As for the inmate's date of return, Beaufort County Sheriff Alan Jordan hopes the jail can be repopulated sooner rather than later.
The great additional burden on my staff in terms of transportation logistics is also a great burden on the taxpayers of the county in terms of cost.
A court order issued by Superior Court Judge Waylon Sermons on June 13th states that the prisoners can return to the facility when it's brought back to a reasonably safe condition on a temporary basis, given the age and overall condition of the facility to be determined by the courts. Jared Brumbaugh, Public Radio East. Today on the Down East Journal, L.C. Morris introduces us to a local woman all too familiar with stages of early onset Alzheimer's disease. We hear from her perspective the effect this devastating illness had on her family and how doctors are often diagnosing dementia in tandem with other illnesses.
Neither one of us really thought anything serious was going on.
There is a saying that when life smacks you down, get back up. But what do you do when you're down and you have no recollection of how you got there? Better yet, who you are or where you are. As we age, our bodies naturally deteriorate. So do our minds. It happens especially rapidly for some people.
This process has been going on silently in our brains for years and years and years. So by that time, the brain has already taken a number of hits.
Dr. Daniel Coffer is the director of UNC Memory Disorders Program. By training, Coffer is a cognitive behavioral neurologist. He specializes in higher cognitive functioning and behavior.
Certain types of memory problems where we forget things that happen, where we repeat ourselves, where we get lost in familiar areas, those are things that are not typical of normal aging. Those are more in line with the warning signs that we typically see with early Alzheimer's disease.
Alzheimer's disease is characterized by a decline in the ability to perform routine tasks, gradual memory loss, confusion, loss of language skills, and impaired judgment and planning. It is the most common cause of dementia.
Alzheimer's really isn't a single disease, and it's kind of a final common pathway where many different types of problems can contribute to what we call Alzheimer's disease. We know that general medical problems like hypertension and diabetes and obesity, that those are all things that can impair brain function and get us one step closer to getting the signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's.
Coffer, who is the co-director of the Carolina Alzheimer's Network, says that when identifying symptoms of Alzheimer's, many people liken it to getting older, or in some cases, just having too much on their plates. Jerry Scoggins, who was very successful in international sales, is now in a comatose-like stage of Alzheimer's.
He knows me. He knows I'm someone special. He holds my hands. And we walk, and that's all we do. We don't talk because there's very little words that come out. But a lot of times he just, once he sees me and we get our hugs, he just walks right on. So sometimes the connection is just a nanosecond.
Sue, Jerry's wife, quickly learned that Alzheimer's isn't just a disease that attacks the elderly. It can strike at any age. Jerry was just 51 years old when he was officially diagnosed, and between the ages of 49 and 50 was when he started displaying symptoms of early onset.
One day he had an appointment down in Miami at 10 o'clock in the morning, and at the time we lived in Raleigh, North Carolina. So he got up at 5:30 in the morning and headed out to the airport. He was going to catch the first flight, the first nonstop from Raleigh to Miami, and about 9:30 in the morning he called and he says, Sue? And I went, well, where are you? You're supposed to be in Miami.
Like most people, Sue thought Jerry was overwhelmed with his career and at one point thought he had attention deficit disorder.
He was so preoccupied with what he was doing. He's always been a very much of an overachiever. So it really would just turn into a typical marital spat. Well, it was a little stressful that year. So neither one of us really thought anything serious was going on. But I believe once we started going to the doctor, then he started, you know, really evaluating what was going on, like something must be wrong. And the first time he went to our internist at that point, they immediately said, you have early onset Alzheimer's. Just very matter of fact. That was not a very good day.
According to the North Carolina Division of Aging and Adult Services, North Carolina currently has over 170,000 older adults with Alzheimer's disease or other types of dementia. By 2030, the total number is projected to rise to over 300,000. Identifying Alzheimer's early on is very important because over the past 10 years, studies for potential therapies haven't proved beneficial. Dr. Coffer explains.
In order to really address this disease in a significant way, we're going to have to catch it very early on. The goal that we have set, we're a long way from that being a realistic possibility, but I think we are clearly starting to move in that direction.
Alzheimer's disease is the sixth leading cause of death for people all ages, according to the North Carolina Division of Aging and Adult Services, and the fifth leading cause for adults over 65.
His initial diagnosis was not Alzheimer's, it was frontal lobe dementia. The reason they thought it was frontal lobe dementia was because he lost his speech right away, and he could not put a sentence together. More than five words, he could not put it together. I remember going to bed that night. We were laying in bed, and he said, the first thing he said was, how do you have a relationship with God when you've lost your mind? So he was fully aware that he was going to lose his mind.
The North Carolina Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System survey indicates that 28% of North Carolina residents are providing regular care or assistance to an older adult with a long-term illness or disability. 65-year-old Jerry now lives in a facility.
There are many days I would walk and just like scream while I was walking, crying out like, God, how am I going to do this? I can't do this. It was just getting so all-consuming. He would never let me out of his sight. I mean, I couldn't take a shower. I couldn't walk upstairs or downstairs. He would follow right behind me as if we were tied together. I couldn't ever get away. And I had 2 days a week where I would have a companion come in just for a couple hours just to take him on a car ride so I could sort of collect my thoughts or even take a shower. Oh, what a novel thought. Or to go to a grocery store by myself.
The decision was one that Sue struggled with. After all, she had uprooted herself and Jerry from Raleigh and moved to Emerald Isle. Sue figured that the Crystal Coast would provide Jerry an opportunity to try to be at peace with himself, all the while thinking that keeping her husband active would stave off his deteriorating condition. Of the 14 years they have been living with the disease, for 12 of them, Sue was Jerry's primary caregiver. The warning signs of early onset Alzheimer's ranges from trouble understanding visual and spatial relationships to misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace steps. Dr. Coffer says not only is there not a cure for dementia, it definitely doesn't exist by itself.
There are many patients who have mini strokes or who have cerebrovascular disease that have cognitive symptoms that have a combination of Alzheimer's and cerebrovascular disease. And this kind of brings up the medical issue of why primary care doctors can play such an important role. There have been studies that shown that people can have changes of Alzheimer's disease in their brain but not show the clinical signs until or unless they also develop mini strokes or cerebrovascular lesions. And it's only with the combination of the mini strokes and the Alzheimer's changes that you see clinical symptoms.
The stages of Alzheimer's can take its toll on everyone involved. Sue started painting as an outlet and a blog, SueScoggins.com, detailing her journey. For more information on the early detection of Alzheimer's disease, visit publicradioeast.org. I'm L.C. Morris.
This is PRE Public Radio East. The Down East Journal is made possible by our members in partnership with Crystal Coast Civic Center, Moorhead City, where every event is waterfront, business meetings, and special event facilities available. Crystal Coast Civic Center, on the web, at crystalcoastcivicctr.com. Today, we bring you an update on a feature that aired in May about sexual assault in the military. The 2014 National Defense Authorization Act, which authorizes funding for the Department of Defense, passed the House on June 14th and now goes to the Senate for consideration. This week, I spoke with North Carolina Senator Kay Hagan about the bill, which contains a number of measures aimed at addressing sexual assault in the military.
It's established an independent review. So if a commander decides not to prosecute a sexual case, then an independent review will then look over that decision. It definitely limits a commander's ability to overturn a guilty finding of sexual assault.
This change is in response to a series of events, including a highly controversial sexual assault case earlier this year. According to the Air Force Times, Lieutenant Colonel James Wilkerson, the former Inspector General for the 31st Fighter Wing at Aviano Air Base in Italy, was found guilty of aggravated sexual assault and sentenced to 1 year in military prison. But in February, a commanding officer dismissed the sexual assault conviction despite incriminating evidence.
This bill changes that ability. And then also, many of these individuals, they need counsel. The victims, and so a special victims council is now going to be in place to assist victims of sexual assault.
The Pentagon estimates up to 26,000 men and women service members were assaulted in unreported incidents last year. In fiscal year 2012, there were a total of 3,374 reported cases of sexual assault involving service members as victims or subjects, a 6% increase from the previous year. To learn more about how Camp Lejeune responds to sexual assault cases, go to publicradioeast.org and click on the News tab.
This is Ann Edwards, Horticulture Extension Agent, with this week's entry in the Garden Journal. It's blossom end rot time in the garden. That's when the ends of your squash or tomatoes turn tan or brown or even black, and the fruit fails to develop properly. It's really frustrating for gardeners who've carefully tended their plants and watched the fruit begin to form, only to lose it after it gets started. So what is blossom end rot, and what can you do about it in your garden? Well, first of all, it's not a disease. So it's not going to spread from plant to plant. It's actually caused by lack of calcium in developing fruit. And there's a lot of reasons why you might have a calcium deficiency. Calcium must be absorbed by plants from the soil. But low soil calcium is really usually not a problem for us here in eastern North Carolina. Instead, plant stress or really low soil pH are the causes of this problem. And often that plant stress has to do with lack of water when the plant is developing the critical fruit. Plants have to absorb calcium that's dissolved in soil water. So if the soil around the roots of your tomato or squash is allowed to dry out completely during development, well, during that period, the plant's not absorbing any dissolved calcium because there's no water there to dissolve it. If that happens to be when the particular tomato or squash is forming, well, then you may have that deficiency of calcium in the fruit and end up with blossom end rot. If your soil is very acidic, a pH below 5.5, well, some nutrients, including calcium, can be locked up chemically, so even if there is water, the plant can't absorb it. If low pH, also known as acidic soil, is the problem, it's going to be almost impossible to change it this year. You raise the pH with lime, but sprinkling lime on the plant or on top of the soil, well, it's just not going to have an impact. Lime has to be mixed into the soil. So you're going to need to incorporate the lime when you don't have plants growing there. And then work on adjusting the pH for future years. But what about water? That's something you can control. Be sure to keep your plants evenly watered throughout the season, making sure the soil stays moist but not sopping wet. Because, as we've discussed with other issues, you can have the same impact from too much water as you have from too little. If you drown the plants and the small roots that absorb water rot in the soil, well, again, without the roots to absorb water, you can have that calcium deficiency. So with water, the trick is not too much, but not too little. A nice, consistent, moist soil is the most important thing you can do. And one other thing, don't over-fertilize with nitrogen. Are your plants huge and tall with many dark green leaves? That may be a problem. If you've put too much nitrogen on the plant may be growing too quickly and not able to translocate enough calcium through the plant to the fruits. So keep an eye on your garden. Don't over-fertilize. Don't over- or underwater, and make sure you test your soil. And if some of your squash or tomatoes do have blossom end rot, go ahead and pick them off and throw them away. They're never going to develop properly. And when I say throw them away, I mean put them in your compost pile. And I'll talk to you in next week's entry in the Garden Journal.
Two science-centric nonprofits are teaming up to bring an astronomy-themed star party to Pitt County this weekend. Lee Jenkins has more information on both the party and the organizations.
Interested in astronomy or just a picnic under the moon? You're in luck. The nonprofit organizations A Time for Science and the Carolina Skies Astronomy Club are throwing a summer solstice star party this evening at A Time for Science's Science and Learning Center in Grifton, and everyone's invited. The event is free and features several special attractions. Families can enjoy an evening picnic as early as 6 while they wait for night to fall. There's also a NASA-loaned tire from the space shuttle Endeavour, proudly displayed in the main office, says the Time for Science directors Nancy and John Bray.
We wrote a grant
through Go Science, the science center in Greenville, and to this time they don't have a place to display it, so they have loaned it to us.
Then there's a scale model of the solar system, which is, according to John Bray, impressively large.
From the sun clear out to the dwarf planet Pluto is 1,000 yards or 0.6 miles.
Later in the evening, the Astronomy Club will provide telescopes to view the main astronomical feature, this year's one and only supermoon. As its name would imply, it's larger than your ordinary moon. It's also much brighter, requiring special filters to be viewed from a telescope. It can still be seen with the naked eye from anyone's backyard, however. A Time for Science is an educational organization that was founded in 2009 with a simple motto, according to John Bray.
Experiencing nature, doing science, and having fun is the main purpose.
Bray's primary focus is making sure the community has an adequate understanding of science.
We have been concerned with the level of science literacy and science education, as well as environmental awareness and consciousness on the part of society, and especially among the children.
A Time for Science has hosted several local projects, from April's What's Bugging You presentation on insects to 2011's Pioneering Tech Day, dedicated to showcasing various technological breakthroughs. While it doesn't currently offer membership, John and Nancy hope it will in the near future. And with just 2 full-time members, they would certainly appreciate the backing.
We intend on being able to get that started. We have interest lists of probably over 1,000 right now.
There are also plans for expansion.
We hope to be able to build and have some better facilities. We're looking at fitness trails. We're working with Vidant Health and so forth on that. We're hoping to maybe get the planetarium facilities.
The Carolina Skies Astronomy Club, who often partner with ATFS for such events, is an older organization founded 20 years ago. With 82 members from all across the state, they cater to hardcore astronomers and casual enthusiasts alike. The club has hosted similar gatherings in the past, such as last year's Venus Transit event at the Greenville Town Commons. The summer solstice star party will take place this evening, starting at 6 p.m. at a Time for Science's Science and Learning Center, located between Aiden and Grifton at 949 Contentnia Lane. It is requested that you register beforehand by phone or through ATFS's website. Directions to the center, as well as more information on either of these organizations, can be found on A Time for Science's website, atimeforscience.org. I'm Lee Jenkins.
Thanks for listening to the Down East Journal. Have a great weekend.